Council of Trent II, the doctrine of the Council. In the first sermon in this series of three sermons on the 450th anniversary of the Council of Trent, we reviewed the significance of this great council, called the most important council of the Western Church, and considered the historical circumstances that led to it. In the second sermon of the series, we shall look at the teaching that emanated from the council, teaching that defines the Roman Catholic faith just as much today as it did in the 16th century. Chief among the council's doctrinal pronouncements must be considered those concerning the holy sacrifice of the Mass. In 1500 years, Martin Luther had been the first person who dared to reform the sacred liturgy of the Church in any essential way. He denied that the Mass was the renewal of the sacrifice of our Lord on Calvary, and denied the real presence of our Lord in the Blessed Sacrament as taught by the Church. Protestantism, therefore, substituted for the immemorial Latin Mass of tradition new vernacular communion services memorializing the Last Supper. Thereby, Protestantism broke its link to the liturgy that had been handed down from apostolic times and had remained essentially unchanged from them. The Council of Trent, in opposition to these new Protestant services, maintained what it called, quotes, "the ancient faith, which is founded on the Holy Gospel, the traditions of the Apostles, and the teaching of the Holy Fathers," close quote. That ancient faith taught that the Mass is a sacrificial act by which Christ, through the ministry of the priest, offers himself to God in an unbloody manner under the appearances of bread and wine. To ensure the continuity with the apostolic faith, the council decreed that the traditional Latin Mass was to be celebrated uniformly everywhere and condemned with excommunication anyone who said that the Mass ought to be celebrated in the vernacular tongue only. Against Protestantism, which recognized the authority of the Bible alone as interpreted by personal opinion, the Council confirmed tradition together with the Bible as the two sources of divine revelation. Moreover, in matters pertaining to faith and morals, the Bible was to be interpreted not by each person's opinion, but uniformly through the teaching authority Christ gave to his Church. St. Jerome's Latin translation of the Bible, known as the Vulgate, was declared to be the authentic version of the Scriptures to be used in the Western Church. Against Protestantism, which taught that man has no free will, but that God has predestined each one of us to heaven or to hell, regardless of what good or evil we ourselves might do in this life, the Council taught that divine grace and the cooperation of our free will can work together to justify us in the sight of God. In a plethora of doctrinal pronouncements, the Council confirmed the traditional teaching of the Church on original sin, the seven sacraments, purgatory, the veneration of the saints, sacred images, and indulgences. In our time, it is interesting to note that virtually all of these doctrines, so forthrightly confirmed and proclaimed by the Council of Trent as the constant teaching of the Catholic Church from apostolic times, are again the subject of denial on the part of many, even in the Church, just as they were in the 16th century. But this great council treated not only the doctrine of the Church, but Church discipline and practice as well. The council made every effort to suppress the abuses that existed in the life of the Church at the time, and aimed to ensure the most effective pastoral care of the Christian people. It took steps to see that bishops dedicated themselves to their ministry and provided for more effective intellectual and spiritual training of the clergy. joined with a high standard of morality. Even today, the church of our time, which around the world is again rocked by moral scandal and prelates who seem to have lost the true Catholic faith, could learn much from the wisdom of the Council of Trent. Such, in broad outline, was the reforming work of the Council, which is impressive in its doctrinal clarity and scope, even from our perspective, 450 years later. The Council did not succeed in abolishing the religious differences generated by Protestantism, but it did prove that the Church could reform herself and maintain her spiritual life once again in the minds and hearts of her clergy and people. In the third and final sermon in this series, we shall recall the great flowering of the Roman Catholic faith that was produced by this great council, particularly through the many saints whose lives were dedicated to propagating the council's work in the life of the Catholic clergy and people.